Thank you. I'm sure you'll agree this is an ideal topic of discussion right after lunch. It's not too gory, so don't panic. So in this paper I'm going to consider how emotion and empathy plays into the late 19th century vivisection debate, and particularly illustrations of vivisection, particularly images from this newspaper, the Illustrated Police News, which was the subject of my recently finished PhD, in which I examined its representation of human-animal relations. So the IPN was, I'm going to refer to it as IPN, was a sensational penny paper that reported on lurid crimes and extraordinary occurrences. But in addition to such hard news stories as ghostly apparitions and burglar biting skeletons and child stealing monkeys, I also reported widely on the late 19th century vivisection debate with a number of illustrated reports like this one. So just for a bit of context, in Victorian Britain, experimentation on live animals was becoming increasingly common as cats, dogs and other domestic animals which were traditionally found at the hearth of the Victorian home were also then found flayed on medical schools and in research labs. And from this, an organised anti-vivisection movement was established. So anti-vivisectionists argued that vivisection was cruel and morally abhorrent, while pro-vivisectionists held that the knowledge gleaned from vivisection had the potential to save human lives and was necessary for that reason. And the role of emotion, more specifically sentimentality, has been widely discussed in relation to the debate, as pro-vivisectionists aim to posit rational science against the sort of hysterical sentimentality, or I think the delusional anthropomorphism was what Will said earlier, of anti-vivisectionists. And a key and related concern of the debate was the visual representation of vivisection, and printing and distributing these sorts of illustrations, like the ones I'm about to discuss, were seen as distasteful and offensive, and many anti-vivisectionist publications and societies refrain from doing so as not to offend or upset or even alienate their readerships. But as I'm sure you can sort of gather from these images, the IPN was no stranger to kind of controversy and didn't really have to worry about offending its readership. And in this paper, I'm going to discuss its really unique contribution to the vivisection debate, and its role in making vivisection visible to a popular audience. Because not a lot of research has been done on this newspaper. It's seen as like a cheap and kind of tacky newspaper. But actually, I'm going to argue that its illustrations, especially these ones, are actually a bit more complex than anyone's really allowed them to be seen as. So these were the leading images on the, I think it was the 21st of April 1877. And these are typical of the kinds of illustration that the IPN would publish in relation to vivisection. So in them sort of are represented the key motifs of the vivisection debate. And these images all appeared in the aftermath of the 1876 Cruelty to Animals Act. And despite the name of that act, anti-vivisectionists claimed that it actually, though it was nominally supposed to protect animals, actually gave vivisectionists greater license to experiment. And for that reason, they sort of mobilised themselves against that act. And as the headline suggests, this is one of many sort of representations of vivisection that the IPN published in response to that act. Although it did start reporting on vivisection a bit earlier in 1868, which is 4 years after it was established in 1864. So I just want to go into these images in detail to explain kind of the context of them. So the first one here features an image of a dog surrounded by water from their kind of dress, suggested to be kind of men of affluence and education, scientists. And the caption is, "A pet dog begging for mercy from a stern-faced scientist." And the dog's ears are folded down, and its paws are sort of tentatively raised, suggesting kind of fear and vulnerability. And dogs were frequently evoked in anti-vivisectionist rhetoric, so such images thought to kind of mobilise, you know, the Victorian dog-loving public. And the use of dogs in anti-vivisectionist materials also came to signify the kind of violation of the domestic realm by science. And the second image presents a more kind of sinister picture of a harnessed cat again surrounded by kind of medical students, but this time the paraphernalia of vivisection is on display in the foreground, and the image is captioned a cat about to be tortured. And the faces of the student spectators are significantly kind of detailed and quite menacing, and one of them smoking, if you can, I don't know if you can see, like, kind of that guy. And again, this kind of relates to the anti-vivisectionist portrayal of scientists kind of quite callous and uncaring and cruel. And it kind of relates to the argumentation that seeing vivisection would morally corrupt the viewer as well, especially young and impressionable medical students. And the third plate depicts a rabbit strapped down with its head in a kind of vice, and again surrounded by onlookers with the instruments of vivisection on display. And I don't know if you can see in the background, there's a sign that says no smoking is allowed, it is likely to interfere with the comfort of the animals. And of course, there's some students smoking again. So yeah, this decision has a number of implications. So most immediately, it's designed to kind of indicate the perceived disregard of the scientific community for animal welfare and established codes of conduct. And it also kind of relates to this, again, this image of the unfeeling scientist. And there's other kind of discussions about sort of the gentleman scientist and the professionalisation of science in that as well. So what each of these illustrations demonstrate are the pain and the fear of the animals, but most importantly, the inhumanity of the people carrying out the vivisection. In order to elicit an emotional response from the reader, as was the custom of this very sensational newspaper. But I think there's more than pure sensationalism going on here. I was immediately struck by the way that this newspaper illustrates vivisection, which is very different to any other British journal or newspaper at this time. It was the only national paper to publish graphic images of vivisection and to firmly support anti-vivisectionists. Most newspapers just took a moderate kind of stance on the issue. As I said, very little research has been done on this newspaper, and the research on the role of the periodical press in the anti-vivisection debate has largely focused on elite publications. So this is kind of what I'm seeking to kind of correct with this project. So as noted, illustration was a contentious issue in relation to vivisection, so there aren't actually a lot of comparative images that I can discuss, but this is quite an illuminating comparison from the Illustrated London News, which was, in comparison to the IPN, a kind of very aspirational middle class weekly title, and it was priced at sixpence, so the IPN was a penny paper, so very different audiences. And this is the only illustrated report in relation to vivisection that I can find in the ILN, because it was very careful never to kind of offend its readers with its illustrations. It's obviously very different. And here they've got a portrait of the French chemist Louis Pasteur next to, but notably separate from, a dog in a cage that's been used in experiments to produce a cure for hydrophobia, which is rabies in its human form. And the dog isn't very detailed, so we can't really discern any sort of expression in the way we are able to with the IPN images. And at the bottom of the same page, they have this image of Pasteur at work in his laboratory, full of caged animals. But again, there's nothing to suggest vivisection. There's not a crowded auditorium, it's a very clean and open lab. There's not a scalpel on site. So this is very much a pro-vivisection representation of the practice. And it's interesting to note that the focus is on the scientist, who's like presented as very authoritative in this portrait, while the animals aren't really drawn in any detail at all, or presented as subjective beings. And the accompanying report similarly doesn't really refer to the practice of vivisection in any great detail, but it does describe with anguish the death of a boy from hydrophobia, and ends with noting that, quote, "Those who saw the agonies of that child at the hospital might well think it worthwhile to call upon science, even though a hecatomb of brute animals were to be sacrificed." So instead of asking us to feel empathy for the animals, instead, the textual report asks us to empathise with the child, while simultaneously kind of criticising this anti-vivisectionist sentimentality. But there are also differences between the IPN and anti-vivisectionist journals. So the Home Chronicler was one of the most prominent anti-vivisection journals at the time, and it also published illustrations of vivisection. It took a really radical abolitionist stance, but at an original cost of 4 pence. Again, its audience was very different to the IPN. And I think the crucial difference between these images of vivisection and those of the IPN is that while I think the Home Chronicler wants its audience to see vivisection, I'd argue we don't necessarily see the animal in these images. That the gaze is a very scientific one, because all of its images, these are the only two images the Home Chronicler ever used, and they were always just reprinted every week. And they're reprinted from medical texts. So you don't really, again, there's no kind of representation of the facial features or expression. Did the mic go off?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good, good.
I'll try and shout. There's no sort of representation of expression, and instead it all focuses on the anatomy of the animals, and like so the exposed ligaments and organs, like, sorry for lunch people. While shocking and upsetting, I don't think that these illustrations necessarily apply a sense of kind of subjectivity. I think what we see is a specimen rather than an individualised animal. And this brings me back to the IPN again. So this is their edition of 7th of July 1877, and it broke from sort of convention to dedicate the entire back page to images of vivisection. And also there's a lot going on here, and there's several sort of key differences between these images and those presented in the Home Chronicler. So the instruments of vivisection are again sort of displayed at the top, and then we have cross sections of animals that are reprinted from medical texts. But then sort of for context, we have this very handsome dog in the middle, and I think is supposed to kind of make impossible any sort of cognitive dissonance between these specimens and these animals. And it's interesting to note that while there's this dog in the middle, we also have sort of chickens, so like faceless animals, which I think is quite interesting, ones that maybe we don't necessarily always immediately empathise with. So it's not just cute animals that the IPN is interested in. And at the bottom of the page, the IPN explicitly evokes the laboratory setting once again. Mm-hmm. And again, the vivisectors are as much the focus as the animals are. So their facial expressions and body language and attitudes are sort of very deliberately detailed to suggest that they're unfeeling and cruel. And I think what the difference is here is that while sort of by clearly showing the laboratory, unlike the Home Chronicler, the IPN really puts vivisection into context. And the scientist also kind of gives the reader a villain. So in other words, I think what the IPN is doing is presenting a narrative around vivisection in a way that the Home Chronicler really doesn't. And you can also see that the images at the side are very similar to those in the Home Chronicler. So I don't think that the IPN, I think they still find those images useful, but I think they're more interested in telling like a story to go with vivisection. But by vilifying the scientific community in this way, the IPN opened itself up to significant criticism, and its illustrations were denounced as false and sensational. The illustration at the bottom is actually supposed to represent, so the main scientist here, is supposed to represent the physiologist and vivisector Elias von Sion, who responded to the IPN in an article in the prominent journal The Contemporary Review, and he called the illustrations shameless and condemned the hysterical sentimentality of anti-vivisectionists. But notably, Sion also said this in relation to the central illustration, quote, "It is unnecessary to remark that the only human face in the picture is that of the monkey." So he's sort of acknowledging that the viewer is supposed to recognise humanity in the animal, but not in the human spectators. And this is where I suggest that the IPN is sort of attempting to encourage this sort of cross-species empathy. He was also very annoyed at his depiction. He said, they have this, I can't remember exactly the words, but it's like, they have this bespectacled and pimpled old man. I was only 32 when I published my book. So he's really not a fan of the IPN. But similarly, Queen Victoria's physician, Dr. Samuel Wilkes, also wrote an article for the journal 19th Century that said, quote, "A penny illustrated paper which panders to the vilest and lowest feelings of the mob by delineating in detail all the circumstances of brutal crimes did good service to the anti-vivisectionists by its false and abominable prints." So while he doesn't explicitly name the paper, it's very clear that Wilkes is referring to the IPN, as no other illustrated newspaper of that time focused on crime and published reports on vivisection. So the fact that two very prominent figures from the Victorian scientific community have, you know, taken the time to condemn these images suggests that they were widely seen and influential. But while these images are here suggested to be false and sentimental, we may also turn to science to verify these images. So as a lot of people have discussed so far, Darwin and his expression of the emotions in man animals argued that rather than merely instinctive beings, animals were capable of experiencing and expressing a range of emotion, both physically and vocally. And Darwin argued that as well as pain, the animals of his study could also experience fear. He continually demonstrates the shared responses of humans and animals to pain, fear and grief. And the work includes a number of illustrations that aren't, like, you know, that dissimilar from the IPN, as you can see here. So the chimp is supposed to be disappointed and sulky, and the dog is said to be adopting a humble and affectionate stance, and the cat is terrified by a dog. So what Darwin's work does is he makes the animal body sort of legible in scientific terms. And while the work that was criticised at the time for its anthropomorphism, it resonated with readers who really recognised the traits and mannerisms of their own pets and the animals that they'd seen at the zoo. And the IPN's readership as well would have noticed, would have understood what this image was supposed to represent. So, for example, this image depicts a dog with its ears folded down, its tongue out of its mouth, and its tail positioned between its legs. And in the expression, Darwin offers an explanation that kind of verifies that this is a scared dog. So it's interesting that Darwin, one of the most kind of eminent science thinkers of the 19th century, and the IPN, which was voted the worst newspaper in England in 1886, are both kind of engaged in the same cross-species empathy based on human-animal kinship. And the definition of empathy I'm using, I don't want to go into too much detail because a lot of people have spoken about empathy. The definition sort of comes from kind of what Anat was talking about Einfühlung, and Robert Fisher and Theodore Lipps, who theorised empathy as the collapse of the boundary between self and other in comparison to sympathy, which denies that fusion. And I'd argue that the clinical images from the Home Chronicler encourage sympathy, but they don't really evoke empathy in the same way that the images from the Police News do. I think the Police News wants its readership to recognise the pain and turmoil of the animals and so attempts to kind of blur these species boundaries. And how much time have
we got? Got about 2 minutes.
Okay. So while this interpretation can sort of be seen as subjective, I think there's also theory behind this. So I'm kind of working in periodical studies, and illustration is still quite under-theorised, but when it came to interpreting these images, I turned to studies that discussed illustrated sensation fiction. So Victorian sensation fiction was so called because it was shocking and thrilling, and its tales were designed to kind of evoke physical and emotional responses from the reader. And Mary Elizabeth Leighton and Lisa Surridge argue that illustrators that accompanied those fictions played a crucial role in this kind of evocation of emotion and feeling. And the illustration sort of highlighted, for example, boundary crossing, and particularly the blurring of social boundaries in terms of class and gender, but also in terms of human and non-human. And I think, you know, very literally we're seeing the kind of division of a boundary, if that sounds really horrible, it's the dissection, but also we're expected to see inhumanity in the spectators and humanity in the animal. So it's that same sort of thing. And there's also an immediacy to these images that's related to sensation fiction. So if anyone's read Lady Audley's Secret, for example, of sensation fiction, and seeing the images from that, you always see Lady Audley about to push her husband in the well, so you're still in the action, and it's the same with these images. There's a sense you could do something to stop it, and that's what kind of mobilised the IPN readership. So by looking at these images in terms of genre, there's also a theoretical underpinning to this kind of these images. And that's why I can try to argue that I think these images are supposed to evoke empathy. And additionally, prominent anti-vivisectionists also kind of they really applauded these images and said, so this is from the Home Chronicler. The Police News, though not of any artistic merit, good, have been most serviceable in drawing public attention to the subject and really instructing it. And the Zoophilist and the Spectator, whose editor at the time was also anti-vivisectionist, also, you know, they called them rough and crude, but they got the job done, I think. So just to kind of really hurriedly conclude, the IPN really made this unique intervention into the debate with his illustrations. And as we can see, they were widely sort of engaged with. So this kind of small newspaper that isn't always taken seriously, I would argue, has played a key role in disseminating anti-vivisectionist ideas to a popular audience. As not only the only newspaper to illustrate vivisection, but also the only publication to portray animals as subjects rather than scientific objects. And while the illustrations of the Home Chronicler are indeed sort of horrifying and grisly, I'd argue that the IPN's illustrations more readily demand recognition and empathy and represent a politicised redrawing of species lines.